Welcome to the Nittany Blues Podcast. By Penn State fans, for Penn State fans. Here are your hosts, Andrew and Vince.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Nittany Blues Podcast, where we talk Penn State football, basketball, and all things Nittany Lions. Thanks so much for joining us on this Wednesday evening. Hope you're all doing well out there. And Vince, I'm hoping that you're doing well as well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Past couple home games have been big wins for Penn State versus, you know, the Fighting Illini in Rec Hall. That was an amazing comeback. We spent a lot of time talking about that in our previous pod, as well as, you know, big win over Indiana this past weekend at home. Probably the first time I've seen Penn State play well in a noon tip-off in a while. So that was pleasant to see. And something else that was pleasant, the team had a very high three-point shooting percentage. They were around 50%. And then the thing that made me is like the happiest guy in the world was the free throw line, man. Like, they were over 80% for the first time on the season. I think they were around 84-85%. So that was awesome. Music to my ears. And that was the reason they won the game. Indiana was couldn't make a three. They were 1-for-12. I thought they were going to give Rutgers a run for their money with being the worst three-point shooting team in the Big Ten. It was a very competitive game overall. Indiana, they just really good in two-point field goals. They shot over 50% from the field. It was a tightly contested game. Just neither team could really pull away at any point in the game. So it was very entertaining to watch. It was the coaches versus cancer game. So it was a good vibe there. And, you know, at the end of the day, the team just was able to pull it out. And that was awesome to see. You know, now we have four consecutive wins over Illinois, four consecutive wins over Indiana, and it's not football. This is basketball. So really something that's exciting to see from our basketball program that's not as highly touted, but still getting four consecutive wins against, you know, two programs that are very highly touted in college basketball within the Big Ten Conference. So very good to see there. Yeah. And then we had tough loss Tuesday at Iowa. Team looked tired, gave up a lot of transition points, a lot of open threes they gave up. The defense was not great, especially in that first half. Iowa got a 17-point lead very early into the game. Penn State crawled back. They got within 2 points. Ace Baldwin then gets a technical following Coach Rhodes in the first half. They were just not happy with officiating. And from then, that was a momentum swing in the game, and you saw Iowa just really coming back and asserting itself, and trying to think of the guy's name, but he had Stanton or something. He had Iowa's first triple double in history. He had 20 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. I think it was like Stanford or something was his last name. And yeah, he was really great shooter, money from the free throw line. That's where most of his points came from. So similar style to how I would be playing. Just that's the only place I would score from the charity stripe. That's why it's called that. So yeah, really, really tough outing. Team like Penn State, where the bench isn't super deep, I think fatigue is really starting to hit them in the season. And I'm hoping that they can regroup and get their legs under them for another road trip versus Minnesota this weekend. That'll be a 3:15 tip off on the Big Ten Network.
Cool. Their season, or their at least their regular season, is pretty much coming to a close now, right? They've only got, what, like a handful of games before Big Ten tournament play starts?
Yep, only two left. They have the Minnesota game on Saturday, and then they have senior night following Sunday, March 10th, 7:30 tip-off versus Maryland, and then Big Ten Conference tournament. And this was a huge loss for Penn State as well. They're one of those teams who's kind of on the bubble for getting a single bye, which is big in the first 10 tournament. You do not want to be a bottom four team. I don't think a bottom four team has ever won the Big Ten Conference tournament. So that's something that where Penn State really needs to step up, especially being a team that doesn't have a super deep bench. And the bench is actually where a lot of the guys shine. Raquandus Mitchell had some nice scoring. You saw Puff Johnson has been playing really well this past week or so. It's nice to see him kind of getting out of his slump from earlier in the season. And another guy who did a really nice job, Raquandus Mitchell off the bench. So he's getting those minutes due to the absence of Kanye Clary. And we saw Leo Boyle knock down a couple threes as well. It's just this team, you know, it looks really tired. And, you know, that's what Big Ten basketball is. That's what conference play is. And you got to be able to respond. And having a deeper bench would definitely help, especially with the pressure that Penn State likes to bring in the press. They don't just run back in the half court and play half court defense. They're bold. They're different. They get after it. And, you know, with that, you do create fatigue in the muscles. So while it can be great for forcing turnovers, that could potentially be a long-term, you know, effect throughout the grind of a Big Ten conference season. So hoping they get the rested up and then they can have a nice showing on Saturday.
Good stuff. What do you foresee in that game against Minnesota?
Minnesota, I think they're a pretty good team. They made big improvements from last year. Last year, they were one of the worst teams in the Big Ten, you know, to put it nicely. And their coach has done a really nice job over there. He's gotten them ready. And I just think Penn State had their chance at home. They had a nice lead heading into the second half and kind of blew it, similar to that Northwestern game at home. And just like the Northwestern game, I felt like this was kind of their shot to beat them. I don't think Minnesota played their best ball. They made some mistakes. And I don't think Minnesota is a good matchup for Penn State. This is a team that's, you know, relatively big. They're physical. They beat you on the boards. And that's another area where Penn State just really struggled against Iowa. They were getting beat up on the boards. They had a lot of second chance points. Penn State, who's a team that relatively takes care of the basketball, had just a lot of unforced turnovers. And Nick Kern, who's normally excellent, you know, getting to the rack, he was just dribbling into trouble. And just they were, you know, Penn State was, you know, bouncing the basketball off of their feet when they were driving. And, you know, they were throwing the ball out of bounds at times, just miscommunications. And that wasn't the type of Coach Rhodes coach team that you would typically see out there. And it was just really off night, bummer. Really credit to them for cutting the 17-point deficit to 2 so quickly, but definitely really disappointing that they couldn't find a way to, you know, really finish it out. And another area that I was a little disappointed in was they just were unable to create open looks for Zach Hicks. Iowa really took him out of the game and just they pressured him and made him uncomfortable all night long. And he didn't really have opportunities to put up threes, and he's been shooting 48% from 3-point line. He's been awesome, really integral part of our offense. And Iowa took that away. Now, if that gets taken away, you know, no big deal. But if that something like that is happening, that should create looks for other guys to score. And that just didn't happen.
Gotcha. So who would you say is like maybe the X factor in this one? Like, who are you looking for big things from?
Big things from Minnesota. Kudus Wahab, definitely a big one for me. Offensively, he had a really nice game, and I felt like they were not getting him the ball enough down low. And I think he was like 7 of 8 for that game in terms of field goal percentage. So the fact that that's the only, yeah, he only shot 8 times. He should have had double that amount. And I would have worked harder to get him the ball in the post more. He did great. And I think he's the guy who can really be the X factor if Penn State is to do well.
Gotcha. All right. Well, when did you say that game was?
That'll be Saturday, 3:15 tip off.
Gotcha. So the penultimate game of the regular season for Penn State men basketball coming your way at that time. So be on the lookout for that. Vince, we also got some news on women's basketball. Is that correct?
Oh yeah. Women's squad. They had the rec hall game. Unfortunately, we're not successful as the men. They dropped a big loss to Ohio State for their sixth consecutive loss. However, they did end that streak tonight. They won at Purdue 93-88. So really nice to see the Lady Lions get a win heading into Big Ten play.
So is their regular season officially done now?
I believe the Lady Lions have one more game and then they start their conference tournament over spring break, I believe. Let me double check that.
Okay. So they start their conference tournament during spring break. That's a bit of a raw deal, but you know, such is the life of a D1 athlete, I guess, right?
Yeah, normally the men's tournament starts over spring break, and the women are the week before that, kind of around midterms.
Okay.
Yeah, so let me just check to make sure they don't have any games. I think they have one more. Yeah, so women's basketball will also be playing at Minnesota on Sunday. That'll be 1 p.m. tip-off. And then after that, they will be starting their conference tournament on Wednesday, March 6th.
Where are they looking to be seeded right now?
Right now, I haven't checked for a week or so, but they should have a single bye. They were in good position a month ago to have a double bye, but they've just losing six games in a row. That's just not going to cut it.
Yeah,
so they're probably in a similar position to the men's squad, where they're fighting for that like 9-10 spot to just make sure they don't slip down to that playing that first day, because it's really you're just making it hard on yourself if you're playing that first day.
Did Penn State have a double bye last season with Shrews?
They did not. They were I think they were the 7 seed.
Got it. Man, what a run that was.
That was a special run, man. Just that reminded me of when I think it was our senior year of high school. I think it was 2011 when they made it to the final and then lost to Ohio State.
Yeah. That was that would have been Taylor Battle.
Mm-hmm. That was special. And then we lost to Temple in the first round.
Yep.
And then there went my perfect bracket.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because Ohio State back then, they probably had it was probably Jared Sullinger at that time, right?
Maybe. That might have been like the
Greg Odom years.
Maybe, yeah. I'm thinking Greg Odom in my head.
Okay.
For some reason around that time. Or maybe it was Mike Conley or Evan Turner.
Okay. They just have these like stretches where they're really good.
Yeah, it's very strange, but you know, thankfully we were able to get a win against them this year. And that was one of Coach Rhodes' big goals. So happy to see them accomplish that.
Amen to that. So you got anything else on basketball here?
Yeah, just really excited these last two games. I'm hoping they can get their legs back under them, especially that Maryland game where they get 8 days rest. That's going to be huge. And I expect them to win that Maryland game at home. Senior night. Right. I think that'll be awesome. Minnesota, I think that'll be a tougher win, but time will tell. That's why you got to tune in. Check them out.
That's a win against Maryland would be a pretty big deal. They typically have the upper hand on Penn State most times in basketball, it seems. So,
yeah. However, Maryland, kind of like Michigan, is having a really down year. They're kind of one of those squads similar to Rutgers where they're really stingy defensively, but offensively, like they really rely on rebounding and second chance points, not the best outside shooting team from the arc. So I would expect that to be a really low scoring defensive battle, but that's one where I think Penn State can really come out on top, because that first half at Maryland, they just played some of their worst basketball of the season. And then they really had to fight back and claw and scratch just to send it to overtime. And then overtime, you know, unfortunately didn't go their way, but that's a game I felt like, man, they should have made that comeback. So I do think that there's a good chance that they're going to get that win at home. The guys are going to have well-rested legs. There's really no excuse not to get it done.
There you go. Vince Vidali calling his shot and in a way calling out the team. So Mike Rhodes and crew, they got to be ready, or else the Nittany Blues podcast is going to be rightly disappointed.
Absolutely. However, something I'm not disappointing by is Coach Rhodes being the second fastest coach to get to 8 Big Ten conference wins. He's behind only Jerry Dunn, who won 8 of his first 10 games. And Rhodes, I believe, I think it was 17 games. It was 17 games to get to 8 Big Ten road wins. So pretty good company. It took Micah Shrewsbury 22 to get to that mark. And you know, if you're a Penn State basketball fan, you know that fans are very happy with Shrewsbury's coaching performance over the past 2 years. So the fact that Rhodes is, you know, getting to that level that quickly is, I think, a really bright sign in the future for him to build this program.
And look at some of the competition that he beat along the way too. I mean, you're talking about multiple highly ranked upsets for Penn State on a team that just by traditional standards is kind of patchwork, you know, kind of put together through the transfer portal and stuff like that. You know, so I think it it's really a good or a sign of good things when you're able to have even just flashes of success like this, a conference that is as deep and as consistent as the Big Ten, except for when it gets to NCAA tournament play, which is a different conversation. Still, it's good teams that he's beaten.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's played a lot better teams than Coach Shrewsbury played in his first year at Penn State. Like, he was playing games like at UMass and just these lesser, like, I can't even tell you the tournament they were in his first year. But, you know, due to their success last year, Coach Rhodes got invited to take his squad down to the ESPN Invitational, where they had to take on, you know, Texas A&M, highly ranked team at the time. They had to take on, you know, his old squad, VCU. They had to take on Butler, all good basketball schools. So I do think that the out-of-conference schedule was a lot more difficult than, you know, Coach Shrewsbury's in his first year.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Yeah, so I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's in today's NIL world, it's hard to really kind of pinpoint what Penn State will look like for next season. But, you know, we know that we have a guy who's competent and knows what he's doing at the helm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the best thing about Coach Rhodes is he's a PA guy, loves Penn State. So I think it would take something really big for him to actually want to leave. And maybe like an MBA job or something. Maybe he grew up in Mahanoy City. So obviously a big Sixers fan, I'm sure, growing up in Schuylkill County. I'd be willing to bet money on that. So, yeah, I don't foresee Nick Nurse losing his job anytime soon. So hopefully we're safe and get to have Mike Rhodes for the long haul. And I think he's a winner. And speaking of NIL, I do think that's a pretty good point to mention, because I've been hearing a lot of coaches and seeing Facebook reels about players complaining about things in terms of NIL. Mm-hmm. However, when it comes to coaches at most of those programs, if they get a better opportunity, they move those programs. Like, this program pays them more prestige, they move over there. So I do think it's almost a little bit of a double standard in terms of coaches complaining about the NIL. What are your thoughts on coaches and kind of their opinions on NIL when you hear statements like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to take all that with a grain of salt, because, like, I think there's also a bit of an inflated, like, sense of self-evaluation that's going on in college athletics. Because I think it was Loxley, or I think that's who it was. Hold on a sec. Yeah, it was Mike Loxley from Maryland made kind of an offhand comment where he's like, now all of a sudden you've got your third string tailback coming to you and saying, hey, I need $100,000. And you're standing there saying, well, where's this $100,000 going to come from? Like, so I think it's a difficult thing to balance, like, the fact that these young athletes are getting money that is generationally changing their future. And so I'm not saying this to be like negative, but it's a cash grab operation. Like, you're trying to maximize the value of what you're able to do right now. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's only natural. Like, we all do that in some sense or fashion. Like, you know, we're trying to make as much money to set ourselves up for the future and, like, provide for our family, et cetera, et cetera. We just have different ways of doing it. You know, like, we're looking for, like, career opportunities or, like, side hustles and stuff like that. Like,
our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. For our lucrative podcasting career. But, you know, for them, like, they're trying to maximize the value that they are able to utilize right now. And that's completely natural and all that stuff. But I think that there's, you know, with that is kind of creating like an upheaval where the coaches need to balance not only their, I guess you'll call them demands, but they also have to manage the expectations and questions of however many other young athletes that are asking them similar questions. You know, so I think there's a little bit of like a, you know, you make X number of millions of dollars every year, like suck it up and deal with it. Like that's certainly true. But I think that it's also true that there's like, this is, it's like difficult to kind of manage this, and just keeping your roster together is way bigger part of the job than it ever was before because of this. I'm not saying that like we should throw a pity party for these guys, but I think there's some credence to it. But yeah, I mean, it's like from the outside looking in, you're like, well, how much sympathy should we really have for these guys? I mean, they're making millions of dollars to coach this game. And if they get fired, they're still going to be making millions of dollars because of like contracts and stuff like that. So yeah. It's like, you know, it is what it is, but I think that part of the job has gotten harder.
Yeah, I do agree. It's almost like you have to be this giant NIL fundraiser, and that's the biggest part of the operation. It's not even, it's like the piece of the pie that's coaching football is, you know, much smaller than it is. Like you hear Coach Franklin like all the time. He's like, he gets 2 hours with his guys each day. Like throughout the rest of his day, he's doing other stuff. Like he has to be the CEO of Penn State football and do all those other tasks and duties. And a lot of the stuff it's stuff he doesn't want to be doing. So it's, you know, it's a really challenging career, a lot of stress, especially at a place for Penn State where you are expected to win and be a perennial powerhouse. So it is a challenge, but you know, also for the players, a lot of them are not going to the NFL. A lot of them are not making money. And if they do, a lot of them might be undrafted or late round picks. And
that's why I say they're trying to maximize their value right
now. Yep, absolutely.
And so, you know,
makes perfect sense. And I would do the same thing in their shoes. I know I'm probably not going to, like, your chances of making it to the NFL from the Division I level is very, very small. And that's what it comes down to. You got to maximize it. You can use that money to, you know, buy a house. And the more cash you put up front for a house, you're not going to be having debt and paying interest and things of that nature. So if you can do that and get that biggest like task out of the way, like you're set for life and you can do whatever career you want. And all you need to do is like pay for your food and utilities and taxes and like you'll be set. So yeah, that's a great opportunity. Like it's something that's really cool. And I wish it was available when I was in college doing athletics. Wasn't to that level where I could be getting that. Wasn't that talented of an athlete. But if I was, that would be something I'd be really excited about.
Yeah, for sure. Then you could be doing some Blaze Alexander dealership ads like Julian Fleming.
Absolutely. And hey, that's where I got my car. So like, I'd be happy to like sign me up. Like I'll be a sponsor. They can be the official dealership of the Nittany Blues podcast. And
nice.
You know, we'll get a good partnership going.
I got some people in the Blaze Alexander family. So, you know, I wouldn't say it's impossible. It's highly improbable, but it's not impossible. Right. I got like my truck from there.
Like Julian Fleming. Let's make it happen, man.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a good segue too, actually. There's been a lot of discussion, you know, because now we're in the postseason of football. We're kind of in this sweet spot where like season ended a little bit ago. We haven't gotten to the combine and the draft yet. So people need to like start writing about stuff. So one piece of discourse that I've seen online is asking the question or posing the question, does James Franklin have something to prove in the 2024 season? So given that the season is, or the schedule is changing, the Big Ten has changed, the opponents are going to change, Penn State is not going to be facing the two-headed monster that is Ohio State and Michigan every season. However, it's not like the difficulty level has gone down. You know, if anything, it's kind of just stayed consistent when you aggregate kind of, you know, the collective difficulty of the opponents. So I'll ask you, do you think James Franklin has something to prove this upcoming season?
I think he does. And really, the fact that Penn State has been a team to get past all these lesser opponents, but then consistently lose to Ohio State and Michigan, becoming a trend 3 years in a row for, you know, both of these programs. And it's just, they can knock it over that hump. And I think, you know, part of that might be, hey, Ohio State and Michigan, they're really freaking good.
Yep.
Like that is what it is. Like if you're a top 10 team and you're playing a top 5 team, like somebody's going to be better. However, I feel like we're going to get a better evaluation as fans when they're going up against teams like Washington and Oregon and USC, UCLA, they're going to be getting more of these teams that are typically ranked in the top 15, similar to their level. And really what I want to see is Penn State rise to that level and find ways to win. Like Ole Miss, like they're facing another top 15 team around their level and they lay an egg, man. Like that was just not a great performance. And it really makes you question how good this football team is. Their only ranked win last year was Iowa. And Iowa, I thought, was severely overranked. Their offense, as long as you don't turn the ball over, they're not going to outscore you. They're like, I'm not afraid. So it's just,
how dare you, Vince? That's the vaunted Hawkeyes offense that you're talking about there.
Hey, if you're talking basketball, man, they have the like some of the best offensive stats per game in the Big Ten, actually, in terms of I think it was like scoring. I think they're in the top three in the Big Ten. So in basketball, it's a different story, but football, ain't afraid, man.
All right, fair enough.
Oh, actually, funny story. I forgot to bring this up of how I got to the game on Saturday. And this is such like a Vince story. You're going to get a kick out of this. So I got home from work at the Y, and my roommate, she just like parked her car in a different part of the driveway because like the end of our driveway, you know how there's like grass there?
Yes.
So it was like, it got like really muddy and like the car would get stuck. So I was like, so I got home. I was like, hey, can you move your car? I'm going to head over to the game. And she's like, yeah, sure. And then the battery just doesn't start. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me right now. Like tip off is in like 20 minutes. I was like, oh, crap. So I literally just hopped on my bike and like,
oh, my God,
this man to the BJC and made it like just in time for tip off. And I'm like, hey, wow, this is great. I saved money on not having to pay for parking and still made it to the game on time. So
where'd you like lock it up?
I just locked it up outside the stadium there. There's a bunch of
like the bus stop and
like
stuff.
The spin bikes and like big bikes there. Okay. They have a rack for those. So I just racked mine on with the spin bikes. I was just like, okay, it's like one of those things where I'm just like very thankful. I have a very high level of cardiovascular fitness so I can get myself from like point A to point B very quickly.
Nice. You were right. This is a very Vince story.
That's just like, you know, one of those things life throws at you and you have to pivot and there you go. You make lemonade out of lemons.
Did you get your battery situation sorted out? Did you jump it?
We tried to, but like my car wasn't able to like turn enough because we have that, you know, I have that like weird little side yard in the fences there. Like I wasn't able to like drive my car. I would have had to like drive my car through the fence or something. Like,
so what'd you do?
I think she just got like roadside assistance to help out and just get a new battery and car's working good. So I'm happy her car is working now and like she's able to get to where she needs to go and has a functional car because it can be very inconvenient not being able to drive places. So
yeah.
Happy that got worked out.
Gotcha. Cool. So what were we on? We were on James Franklin.
Sorry, got us distracted.
No worries. So you think James Franklin has something to prove? I would say I'm also in that camp. Just because, you know, that's always been the perennial knock on Penn State and James Franklin as a coach. Because, you know, I think what really the 22 team showed us was, even though they did lose to those teams, they were still squarely like one of the top 10 best teams in the country, winning the Rose Bowl pretty decisively against Utah. And I think, I'm not going to sit here and like make guarantees that the result of the Peach Bowl would have been different if Penn State was at full strength, but they definitely would have looked a lot more competent, you know, if they were. I'm very confident in saying that, you know, especially since the defense was really the big gun of the team for them last season. So, you know, that we, and, you know, maybe we're too close to the team, so we aren't able to like see through the veil a little bit. But I think we're both pretty confident in saying that, you know, they're one of the, like the top 15 teams in the country. But, you know, because of the lackluster performances against these top five ranked opponents, you know, they just don't even look like they belong on the field. So that really needs to change in 24, because this, like, not only is this like the new look Big Ten, this is also kind of like a shuffling of the cards, changing of the guard, where like the hierarchy is going to kind of be established, you know, like this is going to be the first time that these teams are going to be playing each other. And this is going to be on the Big Ten record forever, you know? So you got to come out strong. You got to come out firing. I'm going to sit here and say that, like, really to kind of stay away, or like, you know, kind of push off some of the discourse of this kind of stuff, they have to win at least like one or two of these ranked matchups next season. Like that just has to be it. So I think that they have a pretty decent chance to do so, considering some of these teams that they're going to be getting at home, and, you know, some of these key pieces getting a year under their belt. And I mean, obviously there's some shuffling of the deck with defensive pieces. I mean, obviously losing your two starting defensive ends, all of your starting corners and stuff like that is going to raise big question marks, and rightfully so. But I think just collectively they have the juice to do it. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that James Franklin does have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, so hopefully the team kind of responds in kind.
Yeah, I think that's a really good dialogue. And I think that, you know, we're just gonna learn when he talked about getting from Penn State from a great team to an elite team. He talked about taking that leap, and we're going to see if he can take that leap as a coach too. And I think next season is going to be very telling if James Franklin is an elite coach, or, you know, maybe he's just a good coach and that's it. And he won't get us to that next level. So I think that's it's going to be really showing. And next season, I think we're going to learn a lot. I do think that if Penn State is unable to make the 12-team playoff, I think it would be very bad. It would be very bad. And I think you would really start to question Penn State ever making it, and, you know, Franklin's long-term future with the team.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a strong statement, but I think it's true. There was a graphic somebody did. It might have been CBS Sports or someone else, but they did a thing where, you know, they kind of showed how many teams, which teams would have made the 12-team playoff in the 10 years of its existence, and how many times.
And Penn State would be four.
Yeah, along with Notre Dame. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, so we'll see. But on top of that too, I forget who it was. I should be more prepared for these things if I'm going to like start them as discussion points. But
hey, we want an NIL deal before we start getting more prepared for our podcast.
That's right. Yeah, we got to be paid to be more prepared. We kid though. But somebody listed Drew Aller as the most interesting QB going into the 2024 season. And, you know,
so he's like the Dos Equis guy of quarterbacks.
I mean, maybe.
I think it was interesting more so, man in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, he does all these things and he's just like this international man of mystery. It's more so, you know, that there's a lot of like unanswered questions around him. You know, he came in with like all the pedigree, all the talent, all the hype, all the expectations and stuff like that. And he was okay last season, but he wasn't that, you know, Justin Fields come out right out of the gate and just light up the world, or like a Trevor Lawrence, you know, light up the world kind of quarterback who's like a five-star guy. And I'm looking at it now, and it was ESPN's Bill Connolly, who is very well respected, very well known college football columnist for ESPN. I believe he's also written for a number of other outlets. But so he listed Drew Aller as his most interesting QB for the 2024 season. That was ahead of a bunch of other guys going into, or, you know, just kind of saying like he's more interesting, like as a prospect, as a, you know, an unfinished product ahead of a bunch of other guys. So I think that's pretty telling. There's still a lot of belief. There's still a lot of hype around Drew, rightfully so. So hopefully people aren't too skitzed out by the coaches naming Bo Perbula these winter workout MVPs for the quarterback room, and is instead
like quarterback controversy.
Yeah, I know. Which
Hackenberg McSorley 2.0.
Oh man, yeah, tell me about it. But yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting. And so I have kind of a interesting question for you. I intentionally didn't tell you about this beforehand, because I want you to like give me your gut reaction kind of response to this. So Justin Fields, I mentioned him just a moment ago, recently, I think it was as part of like a radio interview, named his Mount Rushmore of Ohio State players. So, you know, the four guys that he kind of sees as being like the paramount players for the Buckeyes. And I mean, given just how illustrious that program is, I mean, you're talking about a huge well of players. But he named Ezekiel Elliott, Troy Smith, Ted Ginn Jr., and Eddie George as his Mount Rushmore of Ohio State football. So I'm not going to ask you about your reaction to his Mount Rushmore. I want you to name me your Mount Rushmore of Penn State football players. So Vince, the floor is yours.
The floor is mine.
Mm-hmm. I want to see how like closely we align on this, because I have thought of mine, so I want to hear yours.
Good question. I'm going to go with Saquon Barkley.
Okay.
Bringing us to a Big Ten championship, very big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Got to go with the Heisman winner, John Cappelletti.
All right.
I will go with LeVar Arrington.
Okay.
Thing is, I know I'm going to miss somebody. I'm going to be like, oh, shoot. Like, you're going to say one of your guys, and I'm going to be like, oh, wait, I didn't even think of him. And because we have had a lot of great players who have been in different eras, and it's tough to keep track of all the different eras.
That's true. So you need one more guy, right?
Linebacker, you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think since ChatGPT told us that Jack Ham was the best linebacker for Penn State, I think I got to go with Jack Ham.
All right, cool. So you got Saquon, Jack Ham, LeVar Arrington, and John Cappelletti as your Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I think those guys are the best. Am I right? Am I wrong? What's yours? I'm going to see how many we agree on here.
There's no wrong answer here. I mean, this is just your opinion. But I will say we match on three out of the four. So
okay, so I'm not that far off.
No, like certainly not. Yeah, I also went with Jack Ham. He was like number one on the list, you know, being in the college football and NFL Hall of Fame, really kind of started linebacker U for Penn State, won multiple Super Bowls with the Steelers. Then continuing with that, LeVar Arrington, you know, even though they didn't win championships when he was at Penn State, he's probably the best player to ever play linebacker for the school. So you got to go with him. He's like the quintessential linebacker of linebacker U. And then I went with John Cappelletti because, of course, I mean, you got to go with the Heisman winner. Like if there's only one from your program, you got to throw him in on the Mount Rushmore. So he's there. And instead of Saquon, so I was flipping between Saquon and a couple of other guys. I went with Todd Blackledge, winning the first natty for Penn State football. So, you know, not in terms of, like, I think that Saquon is the most athletic player that's ever played for Penn State football, but I gotta go with the guy who threw the toss at Greg Garrity. I mean, it was close, but that was my rationale.
Okay, so do you think there's a quarterback bias here? Because back in those days, a lot of the times the national championships were won by, you know, defense being really good and running the football.
I mean, sure, yeah, but you know, they threw the go-ahead touchdown on like a 50-yard go route. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're all like Patrick. They were like Patrick Mahomes, but that's not an easy pass to make.
Okay, so is Nick Foles on your Mount Rushmore of Eagles players?
Man, that's a tough one. You're just hit me with like the Uno reverse card. All right, I'm going to do this like by process of elimination. So I'm going to go with Doc,
mm-hmm.
Reggie White,
yep,
Randall Cunningham, and, oh man, holy crap.
I think I'd go with Donovan over Randall.
Really? Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, why so? Just because of, like, pure consistent achievement over time or skill?
Yeah, I think so, like. Randall didn't bring us to a Super Bowl. He was awesome and fun to watch, but.
Well, I mean, neither did Donovan.
But he got them at least to a Super Bowl. Randall didn't play one.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Okay. So he played in that like Ron Jaworski Super Bowl.
Hold on.
Because I thought Jaws played under Vermeil.
Correct. Yeah. In the 70s. They lost to the Raiders.
Yeah. I thought he was the starter.
Correct. Cunningham was after Jaws' time.
So Cunningham never played in a Super Bowl. I'm saying Donovan had. and he just had like all that consistency. He had like
Right. Yeah. Cunningham never made it to the Super Bowl. I thought he did in the 80s. So my bad.
Okay. So I definitely agree with Reggie White and Doc for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Concrete Charlie.
Mm, yeah.
Chuck Benarek. And then.
So you're left with one more.
Ooh, this is tough. Because you got Steve Van Buren with all those running back records. And then you also got Jason Kelsey.
Yeah.
Like we can. Jason Peters is so good, though, too.
I refuse to name him on a Mount Rushmore. He soured himself so much to me.
I feel like he's a guy who's a victim of his own success because he was like playing at like a Pro Bowl level for like, I don't know, like 10, 15 years, like bust at the position and then just like became like an average player or like, actually, I shouldn't say that. He was like well above average, but wasn't elite.
Sure. So, man. It is tough.
I think I would go Kelsey, Concrete Charlie, Reggie White, Doc.
Okay. I mean, obviously we don't like hold him in, you know, like perfect regard because of how things ended, but you could argue that T.O. was probably the best offensive player that the Eagles ever had.
Well, I think in terms of Mount Rushmore too, you do need some longevity. True. Now football, you're, because T.O. is there for like 1 year.
Yeah.
Like he's not really.
Was it for only one season?
One season, yeah.
Huh. I thought
and then he went to the Cowboys. He had like that weird off-season like drama, and he was like doing like sit-ups in the driveway or something while he's being interviewed.
Right.
That happened the year after the Super Bowl.
You know what? I think you could make an argument, though, to put Foles up on there. Because talk about a guy who, like, you know, not only did he win, he beat the Eagles like arch nemesis when it comes to, you know, them avenging their most recent appearance in the Super Bowl, beat the greatest quarterback of all time, at least right now, in the Super Bowl in a game that he historically dominated. And on top of that, I mean, even before that postseason run, he was really good. What was it in like 2013? Tossed 7 touchdowns in a single game to tie the record and stuff like that.
Only so, 2 interceptions.
Yeah.
The whole year.
So, I mean, like he was really good for a season. So I don't know. I feel like there, you could shuffle in a bunch of names in there and people would probably be okay and happy or unhappy because that's how most people are on the internet, but that's fine.
Yeah. And I do think in terms of a Mount Rushmore, I do think longevity plays a role. Like Nick was great for like those 3 years. He had like that 27-2 season, then came back as the backup, got hot, won the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and then was the backup the next year, played when Carson got hurt again, did well in the playoffs, and you could argue
on a run, yeah.
Pretty much went on a run. If Brandon Brooks did not get hurt in that Saints game, they scored touchdowns on their first 2 possessions. You're like, wow, they're going to dominate. And then Brandon Brooks gets injured and the offense doesn't do anything the rest of the game and they lose like 20-14. So I do think there's a little bit of an argument there, but his window is very small.
Sure. So, all right. So you've got Doc, Donovan, Kelsey, and White. I'll agree with that list. So let's bring it back to Penn State, though. So you
have your this 4. Is a Penn State football podcast. Right.
I mean, we could start an Eagles podcast.
How much more of Penn State players to play in an Eagles jersey?
I mean, how many have there been? I feel like there has
like
been
Tony Hunt
enough. Yeah, Tony okay. Hunt. He was underrated, man. I loved watching him at Penn State. So the only differences that we've got are Saquon and Blackledge. You got any honorable mentions? I'll give you like up to 4 that you would put on like your alternate Mount Rushmore.
My alternate.
Yeah.
I'll do Blackledge.
Okay.
I'll do Kejana Carter. Had that big run in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, he had a lot of those.
A lot of those.
Lots of big runs.
I think Micah Parsons can be on there.
I mean, that's for you to say. This is your B team Mount Rushmore.
I mean, based off of how he's playing for the Cowboys right now, like I think that's fair.
Okay.
Got Micah Parsons. And also, you saw how bad they looked without him during the COVID season.
It's true.
And I'm trying to think of like an offensive weapon. That would be a good one.
Okay.
But Penn State's just been more of a defensive school.
That is true.
Yep. I'll go Paul Posluszny. He's another really good linebacker.
Yep. Yeah.
Right, what about you?
Certainly was.
What's your alternate?
Yeah. So I will go Saquon. I will go instead of Posluszny, who is, I mean, obviously, like just in terms of accolade, skill, and achievement worthy there. I'm going to go with Michael Motti in that spot. So I'll go Saquon, Motti, and then
I'm forgetting about Sean Lee. He had that awesome career with the Cowboys too.
He did. Yeah.
But sorry, interrupted. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. But yeah, so I've got Saquon, Motti, then I'm going to go Evan Engram, who is arguably like one of the best wide receivers, if not the best wide receiver to play for Penn State, not named Allen Robinson. And then I'm going to go Trace.
Trace.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. Well, I do feel like NFL stuff does kind of matter too.
Why?
I do.
If that's the case, then LeVar Arrington arguably shouldn't be on there.
That's fair. But I think one I forgot about that should have been an honorable mention, Tom Bahali.
Sure.
Monster out there.
He'd probably be on the C team.
Yeah, for sure. He's a all-time Penn State great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are the kind of the areas where I'm thinking.
Cool.
But yeah, Trace for sure. You know, just based if you're basing it off of like college only, like just the excitement he brought this program was
and just a guy being who a just fan played, favorite too.
It, yeah, and just playing with so much heart and like especially, you know, being an undersized guy and still playing in that style was just awesome to see.
I will never ever forget them taking the ball out of his hands in the 2018 game against Ohio State when they were driving. And then what was
fourth
it?
Fourth and five. Let's give the ball to Miles Sanders up the middle. It hasn't worked all game.
Oh man. Yep.
I was just like, man, what a dumb call. I was like, these guys are gonna pay millions of dollars to call plays. That's what the job comes down to. Call like teach coaching fundamentals and calling plays. And I'm like, that's the best you got. Hand off or run up the middle.
I do remember saying though, like they got the look that they wanted. Chase Young just like blew through the protection to fill the gap. So it's like, take that how you will. But yeah, I mean, with the way that McSorley was wheeling and dealing, like put the ball in his hands. But
yeah,
what are you going to do?
One of those Ohio State losses where we actually do play really great and like lose by a touchdown or less.
That was one point.
Those eat at me, man.
So we'll see if 2024 holds or proves to be the same story. But cool. So we've got our Mount Rushmores. I think that's probably what I'll name this this podcast. I think that'll get people pretty interested. So yeah, if you're listening out there, hit us up with your Mount Rushmore of Penn State football players. You can hit us up on any of our social medias. I'd love to hear them. You know,
Facebook, Instagram, X. We've been really active lately, so
yeah,
check us out.
Amen to that. So you got anything else here on, let's talk about the combine real quick.
Yeah.
So we, like I mentioned before, we're kind of in like a, you know, the in-between period where the season has ended and we're waiting for the combine to begin. So we've got our full list of Nittany Lions who are going to be representing Penn State in Indianapolis for the NFL Combine. Full list here is Caden Wallace, Jop Robinson, Johnny Dixon, Theo Johnson, Daquan Hardy, Olu Fashanu, Kalen King, Curtis Jacobs, Adisa Isaac, and Hunter Norzad. I don't really think there's any like big surprises there. So just as like a discussion point, Vince, who do you think is going to like test really well at the Combine? Like who do you think is going to really stand out here?
I'm going to go Pork Chop and Adisa Isaac. I think they'll test really well.
All right.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Theo. You know, I think
Theo's going to dominate.
Yeah, because he's, you know, he's just like that rangy, lengthy tight end, that receiving tight end. He got a lot of praise and a lot of love from the Senior Bowl, really stood out there. So he's a guy who I think can test really well. Penn State historically, you know, especially during Franklin's tenure, has tested and performed really well at the NFL Combine, thanks to, you know, solid strength and conditioning program. You know, we got the classic, he can run, moment.
He can run, run.
Yeah, Troy Apke's miraculous 40 time performance. So, you know, I can see all these guys doing really well there. But I think Theo, you know, he's going to be like that guy who like kind of jumps out of the gym a little bit with some of these measurables. So, yeah, I could see all these guys doing pretty well.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. How long until that happens?
Let's see. Starts on February 29th. So tomorrow.
All right. Yeah. So nice NFL combine preview addition to the pod.
Hey, man. Who do you think is going to bench the most out of all these guys? Like put up the most reps of 225?
Give me Hunter Norzad.
He'd be my choice too.
Those interior linemen, their arms aren't as long. Like it's so easy for like short guys to get like really jacked. Like if you have like long arms, like it's just so much farther for you to move the bar and like lift more. So I'm going to go with Hunter Norzad, interior lineman all the way.
And plus, I mean, he's like got to be strong as a bull to play center. So,
actually another fun story. I'll have to get my cheat sheet here. Okay. I ran into number 58 at dinner. I was having dinner and I was out and about. Oh, maybe it's Landon Tangwell. Yeah. So he is so tall.
Yeah.
Like, so huge. Not even playing anymore, but he had,
unfortunately,
yep. He had like a brick squad, like hoodie. Like, obviously I'm like, okay, this guy has to be on the football team.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I didn't know that. That's who I had, unless it's like a defensive lineman. Let me see if there's another 58. Landon Tangwell.
Caleb Artis is also number 58.
Oh, could have been him. So I ran it's either Landon Tangwell or Caleb Artis. I'll have to look it up, but both of them are huge.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about an offensive lineman and a defensive tackle. So two of the biggest position, you know, on the football field. So take your pick.
Well, it's so funny because like normally like I go into a room and like feel like a large person just because I'm over 6 feet tall and I'm taller than most people. So like very few people make me feel small, right? So that was kind of funny. And I was at Tadashi, and that's like a pretty small, tightly confined restaurant, so like not a lot of space, but a beautiful view of downtown, so highly recommend it. But yeah, it was funny just like him walking in front of me. I'm like looking up and I was like, man, like this guy could like pick me up with like one arm and just like me around, like really strong dude. So yeah, Penn State, they got some big fellas on the team.
Amen. All right. You want to talk about some wrestling news here?
Oh, yeah. Some of it's good. Some of it's bad.
Yes. So we'll start with the good.
Very bad. Good, good. Yeah. Start with the good.
Yep. So the good is that Penn State has wrapped up their regular season. The perfect record for their regular season finale. They wrestled Edinburgh University out of Pennsylvania. USAC. Yep. And they blanked them. They won the match, I believe it was 55-0 in Rec Hall. So clean slate across the board, Penn State winning every single bout. So we're not going to go individually one by one, but you know, collectively as a team, a strong finish as they prepare for the postseason, starting with the Big Ten championships that are going to be starting here pretty shortly. Bad news, however, possibly really bad news, is Carter Shirachi's health. So at the end of his match, he appeared to have suffered a leg injury. He tried to get up and put weight on it. He couldn't, and he required help from the training staff to get off of the mat. We're not sure what his status is as of yet. We're not sure how severe that leg injury is yet. After the match, during the press conference, Kale Sanderson just kind of said, we're optimistic about his health. He kind of made a little bit of like a lighthearted comment to say that Shirachi is a fast healer. He deals well with injuries and with pain, reminding people that he won the NCAA tournament, the championship at his weight class a couple of years ago with a broken hand, which was true and was extremely impressive. However, like a knee injury is a little bit of a different beast, that sort of thing. So we're not sure what his status is going to be as of yet for the Big Ten tournament, as well as the NCAA tournament. The only time is going to tell there. Thankfully, he does have a little bit of time to recover until those events happen. So we're likely going to learn, you know, a lot more as we get closer to those events. But as of now, huge, huge question mark, not only for him individually, considering he's going for his fourth consecutive NCAA championship for Penn State, as well as, you know, Penn State's overall prospects for winning the NCAA championship as a team, considering that Tsurachi was one of the five number one ranked wrestlers on the team. So that's kind of the long and short of it. Like I said, we're going to probably learn here a lot more pretty shortly, but you know, a lot, kind of a hugely bittersweet moment, you know, senior day, some of these guys wrestling in rec hall for the final time for Penn State. So that was like the last thing that anybody wanted to see.
Yeah, it was just absolute worst news to get, especially to an opponent like Edinburgh. Like if you're wrestling the top of the top and it happens, like, you know, that shit happens. It's sports. When you're at the very top level, like injuries happen and you hope it doesn't happen to you. But yeah, the fact that it's like, oh, like in a match where they wouldn't have even needed Carter to wrestle and, you know, he gets injured and this is right before Big Ten's, right for probably like a month before NCAA's, just the timing's terrible. Then he's a guy that you want to make the Olympics. You want him to be an Olympian, especially a guy who is as talented, as hardworking as he is. And he's a super nice person too. Like I've had the opportunity to speak to him and, you know, definitely had the impression he's a super nice guy and like really cool dude. So it sucks, especially when like, you know, the person a little bit, and just to see that happen in that moment and, you know, very late into his college career, I think he might have 1 year of eligibility left, but to see this happen before the Big Ten tournament and then the, you know, the NCAA tournament, like the Olympics coming up, Olympic trials that are going to be in Happy Valley. Like it just breaks your heart that it happens to a guy like that, who's just really hard worker, outstanding citizen of the community. It's just, yeah, heartbreaking. And yeah, you hope he heals fast. And
yeah,
that's all you can do if you're a fan.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, in terms of, correct me if I'm wrong, but in wrestling postseason, it's very similar to track, where the top eight score points and you go from like 10, 8, 6, like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 in terms of scoring points at each weight class, just like you would in the different events in track and field. Am I right on that for like big tournaments?
I mean, essentially, you score more points for your team the mm-hmm. further that you get into your bracket. So if you like make the finals, you get a certain number of points. If you win the championship, you get, you know, a lot more points than second place and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that we should like force him to wrestle, you know, just if he can even get to like the quarters or something like that, like his health is going to be his number one priority. But if he can even just make it to like the final eight of his weight class, even if he is like hampered by an injury, that would do huge things for Penn State's ability to lock up the team championship, just because like you need guys to like go deep. And like the reason why Penn State over the past 10 years has been able to lock up the team championships before the final rounds, like the final championship bouts day has even begun, is because they have so many guys who like go deep into the tournament. They don't make it to the championship bout, but they go far enough that they collectively score enough points. So like that's really where, you know, you either got to like hope that Carter is healthy enough to go, or you feel really good. And I mean, like, to be completely honest, like you don't hate what you've got in Terrell Barraclough. He's already got a ranked upset under his belt. But as far as like, you know, being able to vie for like that final eight, final four kind of performance, you know, you're not really sure. But, you know, so that's kind of like at least my understanding of it. I'm sure there's going to be people out there who know a lot more who'd mm-hmm. be able to put this a lot more clearly and eloquently, but that's my understanding of it.
Okay. And you know, especially with Nebraska being relatively close
yes.
to us in that matchup, that definitely does bring up some level of concern losing one of your, you know, your five number one ranked guys, because those guys are the most important. They're going to be scoring the most amount of points. Just like if you can get a win in a event in track and field, like 10 points, that's huge. Typically, your winning teams are going to get probably around like 180. But the difference is, in track, you can score multiple people in the same event. So if you have a bunch of like really good shot putters, you can stack up on points there and get a lot of points. So wrestling is very different because you only have one guy per weight class.
Correct.
I would assume. So yeah, it's, you know, you hope the other guy can get by and do well. Sounds like he's made the most of his opportunities here at Penn State, but yeah, definitely level of concern going into the part of the season when we need him most, especially in those dual meets when, you know, if the guy can still win, you're going to get by, you're going to be fine a lot of the time. But yeah, it's just really tough to get it at this point in the season.
Yep. So we'll, you know, keep our eyes open for any news and updates on that. Much like every other Penn State wrestling fan out there. Vince, let's talk about more fun things. Let's talk about happy things. You got some updates on track. I know you do.
Yes. Yes. So speaking of track, so Penn State was the only program this past weekend at the indoor championships to have both the men's and women's squad beat in the top three. So the men were Big Ten runners up and the women got third. So really big performances. On the men's side, they were led by Chekna Traylor. He set a school record yet again in the 60-meter dash. He was a Big Ten champion there, won the 200-meter dash, and then was a part of the Big Ten championship 4x400-meter relay. So really outstanding performance from him. And then you had Haley Kitchen on the women's side. She won both the 800-meter and the 600-meter in a school record time. So that was really awesome to see. Some other notable finishes were Evan Dorenkamp being Big Ten runner-up in the mile, running a 4:03, so very, very fast. And then you also had Mallory Kaufman get second in the shot put. Men's DMR was in the top three. It was a Kylie Kane got second in the mile in a 4:34. So just a really, really great performances from, you know, all sorts of different events to lead to this result. And we also had the women in the pentathlon got first, second, and third. So big points for the women's squad there in the heptathlon, some of the multis.
Awesome.
Among other great performances, but you know, we got limited time here, so don't want to take up too much of it.
Well, I mean, it's our pod. We can go as long as we want, but that's
as long as we want.
That's all cool. Yeah. So what's next on the slate for Penn State track and field?
So if you are in the Boston area, Nationals is going to be happening in the next week or two. And we have several Nittany Lions, including Chekna Traylor and Haley Kitchen, who qualified for Nationals. So those are a few of the Nittany Lions that will be there. So if you're in the Boston area, make sure you check them out.
Awesome.
Oh, and actually, fun story. Where the championship was held in Geneva, Ohio, they have a complex there called the Spire. I actually raced there my junior year, and I ran my fastest 5K time on that track. So it's a pretty good track. It's actually 300 meters instead of 200, which most indoor tracks are. So that was pretty cool. But kind of a funny story was I was running the race and they had the clock up. So I saw my time like when I crossed the finish line. And then typically your times would be up on like a video board, like your official times. And it like didn't happen. And then like after the race, you just had like these officials coming into us and they were just like, so what was your time when you crossed the line? So I'm like, I saw 15:11 for my 5K. And so that's just what they wrote down on like the official results, 15:11. I'm like, oh man, I should have just like lied and made it like 14:59 or something. Just so I could be sub 15, make something up. But I was the good Samaritan.
Well, yeah, you just make yourself like a world record breaker.
Yeah, so my fastest 5K is not FAT. It's not official, but somewhere around 15:11 is my fastest 5K time on a track.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah, they told you to just tell them your time at the end, right?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I told them.
Yeah, just 15:11. So yeah,
right. Yeah, of course. But cool. What else you got?
Yeah, so ice hockey. It was a tough weekend for the Lions. Friday night just didn't have any fight against Wisconsin. They lost 6-0. However, they did bounce back and fight on senior night, which you love to see. They unfortunately just fell a little bit short. They lost 3-2 in overtime to the Badgers. So Penn State hockey is going to finish up their regular season. They'll be traveling to Ohio State, who they swept earlier in the season. So if you're near Columbus, go ahead and check them out. And we have some good things on the women's side. So the number 15 ranked women's hockey team, they won the semifinals. They swept RIT, who is the number 4 seed in the tournament. And next weekend they'll be playing in the championship game. So that'll be in Happy Valley. And, you know, if you're in the Valley, make sure you check them out. It's could be their second year in a row winning the CHA championship.
Sweet. When was that?
Let me check real quick. On Saturday at 2 p.m., they'll be playing Mercyhurst in the College Hockey America Tournament Championship.
All right. Yeah, try to make your way out for that one?
Might make it out. I do know the men's basketball team does play at 3:15, so it puts me in a little bit of a predicament for getting home in time for the game. So that'll be a little bit of a challenge. Some other squads that have been doing really well. Baseball is off to a good start. They're 5-2. Women's softball is off to a good start. They're 11-1 with their lone loss coming to Liberty. So they're off to an awesome start. Very pleased with how they've been doing. Also this weekend, Penn State is going to be playing number 9 Yale at home in men's lacrosse. So they're going to be facing off. The men's lacrosse team is ranked number 12 in the country right now. So that's something you love to see. Both the men's and women's team are ranked in gymnastics. So, you know, ranked teams all around. Your ranked team.
Gymnastics or lacrosse?
So men's lacrosse is ranked number 12. Gymnastics, I believe both the men's and women's squad are ranked or very close to being ranked.
I see.
And then the men's track and field actually moved up. They're ranked number 24 in the country as well after their good performance at the Big Ten Championship this weekend.
Gotcha. All right. Ranked teams abound.
Yep. So love to see it. Women's lacrosse as well, off to a good start this season. Their only loss being Princeton. So they're off to a strong start as well.
Awesome. What else is on your mind?
Yeah, spring's coming. That's we're going to set the clocks in a couple of weeks. So I'm pretty happy about that. You stoked? What's your favorite thing about spring?
Probably just being able to go outside more. Looking forward to taking the dogs for a couple extra walks and stuff like that. So I'm not super thrilled about losing an hour of sleep, as are, you know, like most people, I'm sure. But it's kind of like a nice time of year. The weather's nice and mild. You can start to like spend a little more time outside. Like I said, you could start to like, I mean, I know you've probably just been outside this entire time, but you know, like be able to play tennis and pickleball outside and stuff like that. That'll be nice again. Dude, did I tell you the other day I did glow in the dark pickleball?
Oh, that sounds fun. How was that?
It was sick. So at my club, they like basically taped the entire facility in neon green tape. So all the lines were neon green. The outlines of the net were neon green. They had us put neon tape around our paddles and stuff. And obviously the ball is bright yellow. And so when you see, and we all like everybody like got into it, we were like wearing like glow sticks as like necklaces and bracelets and stuff. I put on like eye black, like in the form of like neon face paint and stuff. Like it was a ton of fun. It was a hell of a time seeing the ball.
I can imagine
at times. Yeah. Like what was kind of interesting at times, like I, you know, like the crowd that I typically play with, like plays at a pretty fast pace. Like, you know, the guys are like swinging hard and whatnot. But so in the corners of the facility, the black lights weren't shining as strongly, so you couldn't see things as well. And then there was also some people who didn't put any tape on their paddle. So all you saw was the faint, like dim point of the ball across the net or across the court. And you see like a shadow moving. And then all of a sudden this ball is like flying at you and you have no idea like what the, what your opponent did to like send the ball in that manner. So you were kind of, you know, just kind of using flick reactions to try and respond to some of the stuff. But it was a blast. Like everybody had fun. They were like playing music and it was all like kind of like a techno rave sort of feel to it. So it was fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast. We'll have to do some of that for your bachelor party.
Some pickleball? We can.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I am so down.
We got lots of pickleball courts up here in State College. Like they really? Been, yeah, we got some by, I forgot the name. There's like a park forest that has some. And the Y has some really nice, like five nice pickleball courts. And then cool. I think they might have some at Burnell Park by the airport. So okay. Could be another potential location to check it out. So
well, nice.
Anyway, wherever we go, we'll find some. There's pickleball courts.
Awesome. Yeah. So we don't need to spend much more time on this, but that sounds fun. But yeah, so spring, you know, some good things in there. Really looking forward to the weather. What about you? What are you stoked about?
Just sun being out, man. More time to ride the bike, and
yeah,
really looking forward to that. That's definitely the number one thing. And yeah, it means we're a little bit closer to summer. And as a teacher, it's great. You're it's not like having not having to work as many hours. So it's
there you go.
Definitely nice to enjoy those couple months in the sun and just, you know, de-stress and enjoy all the best things that life has to offer. You know,
sweet
sunlight and summer and that's the dream, man.
Living the life. Cool. So you want to put a bow on this one?
Yeah. Do you want to tell fans how they can help us out here at the Nittany Blues podcast?
We'd love to. So as I say every week, the number one way to help us out at the Nittany Blues podcast is by leaving a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening. I know it sounds like a really small thing, but it does help us out a tremendous amount. It helps tell the algorithm that they should be exposing our podcast to people who haven't listened to the Nittany Blues podcast before. So it helps us expand our reach and our audience. And so, you know, we can share the love of our Nittany Lions a bit further, which we're always hoping to do. So yeah, definitely leave us a review. You can tell us, you know, what you like about the show, maybe some stuff that you don't like. You know, we love the feedback. We want to incorporate it. You can also follow us on all forms of social media at Nittany Blues or Nittany Blues podcast. Send us your questions, your comments, your concerns, your feedback on the show, whatever is on your mind. We definitely want to hear it. And on top of all that, you can visit our website, nittanyblues.com, to learn more about the show, about myself and Vince. You can see how you can financially support the show if you so choose. You can also visit our merch store at shop.nittanyblues.com. We've got a lot of cool designs there, some stuff that we guarantee you're not going to find anywhere else. So we definitely recommend checking that out. And that's all I got, Vince.
Thank you guys, as always, for listening. It starts with I love you. It ends with I love you. And we want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues podcast. We'll see you next time.